Hello. Just to introduce myself, I'm Rachel Ward, and I'm Head of History at King Edward VI Upper School in Bury St Edmunds. Why do we have to learn about this, miss? It's boring. I don't see the point of this. Why do I need to know anything about the Romans, medieval England, Tudors, Stuarts, Industrial Revolution, Native Americans, French Revolution, 20th century world? Can delete those as appropriate, depending on whether the disgruntled pupil in question happens to be year 7, 8 or 9. Just some edited highlights from my teaching experiences. As you can see, I'm worth my salary. The review of the national curriculum provides the history education community with a golden opportunity to wrestle with and deal with student perceptions of irrelevance for a subject that we hold to be absolutely central. We need to work out, however, how do we let the kids in on this secret? How do we make them see why history matters? One of the first challenges of creating such a curriculum revolves around the rather vexed issue of content. The history curriculum, more so for any other subject, is and has been the focus of intense media scrutiny. Broadsheets and tabloids alike variously bemoan the parlous state of history teaching, lament the lack of dates in the history classroom, and offer us helpful advice on what should and should not be taught in our schools. Much of this reporting leaves me personally seething, but in my more rational moments, I'm forced to concede that perhaps an important issue is at stake here. How do we manage to give our history students extensive and secure chronological understanding, a sound knowledge of major turning points in the past, whatever they might be, and an ability to comprehend Britain's relationship with the rest of the world? However, this is where I and the Daily Mail must part company, for I believe that this sort of historical understanding cannot be demonstrated by the ability to recite the monarchs of England and the British Isles in chronological order, preferably with regnal dates attached. When I inquired about the expected nature of the contribution I was making to this conference, I was told, well, 10 minutes, your personal views on developing a new curriculum for Britain's young people. However, I work in a school, so I had a golden opportunity to find out what the young people in question actually thought, and so I've turned to my students for some inspiration. I work in an upper school, so I only teach year 9 through to 13, and I asked my students what they thought should be taught to 11 to 14-year-olds in their history lessons. In particular, I said to them I'd like them to focus on those topics that would help students in Britain to understand the world in which they live. Now, I'd rather confidently expected that, especially from Year 9, I'd get a focus on the 20th century. I would probably get stuck in the trenches, and I would probably become stranded at Dunkirk. And to some extent, this was certainly true. All year groups felt that a study of the 20th century would be an essential part of the curriculum. However, many of the students conceived of this study in a more imaginative way than many of us, myself included, may have thought. Although the World Wars did loom large, students also wanted a more obviously global perspective, although I sometimes fear here this might be because they don't see the World Wars as World Wars. They see them as England v. Germany 1 and 2, which I think does raise an issue for us here. But Year 9 also wanted to learn more about the Cold War and the history of the world post-1945. Year 11 students, who already study the Cold War for GCSE, also felt that some of the issues that they had touched upon could reasonably be put into a key stage 3 framework, particularly referring to events in Afghanistan in the 1980s. Again, perhaps spurred by current events and crises, most students said they wanted to know more Middle Eastern history, whilst others wished to be better informed about Africa and other parts of the developing world. How come African nations owe the West so much money was one question that more than one of my Year 11 students had asked me. But for those in the audience who might at this point be getting rather alarmed that student perception of relevance is limited to a narrow chronological period, this isn't the case. My Year 13s in particular were very articulate in expressing concerns that the idea of a curriculum that was relevant to the world today might lead to a very reductive and narrow chronological approach, echoing anxieties amongst a range of history educationalists that compulsory study of the 20th century would simply exacerbate the trend towards GCSE and A-level courses in Hitler studies. All students, though, and I was surprised by Year 9's willingness to engage with this, felt that at Key Stage 3, large periods of the British past were necessary, and all the what we might call traditional periods of study, from ancient Rome through medieval and early modern history to the Industrial Revolution and the 19th century, should feature in some way. These students also stressed the importance of chronological understanding. My problem, miss, is that I don't know how all the bits fit together. They weren't saying they needed to know all the dates in the right order. What they were saying was they just didn't know how the different chunks of history that they had studied fit together as a whole, which I think is quite worrying. These same students did not feel quite so enthusiastic, however, about the more conventional means of delivering what we might term such an overview of British history. So perhaps a typical pattern in many schools, the Romans and medieval England in year 7, Tudor and Stuart's Native Americans in year 8, Industrial Revolution and 20th century world in year 9. Rather, they seem to value thematic studies, not dissimilar to the SHP development studies at GCSE, which would allow them to revisit different periods of history from a variety of different perspectives. And so I asked them, okay then, well, what themes would you like to study? The responses varied. Science, technology, cultural history, religion, warfare, attitudes to women and ethnic groups, Britain's relationship with other countries, which they saw both as England's relationship with Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, Scotland and Wales, but also the more traditional international relations type of aspect. Power and authority, who controlled us? How did they control us? Why did that change? Social change, with perhaps the inevitable focus on rebellions and riots, but also issues such as political ideologies. The importance of local study was also stressed, particularly by older students, who felt that the studies of the Reformation that they had undertaken helped them to appreciate the historic surroundings of the town in which they live. If students were writing the curriculum, there would therefore be a considerable emphasis on British history, employing a broad chronological framework and taught using a thematic approach which, arguably, could give a stronger sense of the interrelationship of past events. However, students from all year groups expressed dissatisfaction with a limited diet of world history. This was already alluded to in my comments on the 20th century, but was also mentioned by the students in the context of other periods of history. When I asked them which parts of the world they would like to study more of, the following were recurrent choices: Africa, Asia, the Americas, the Middle East. Students also expressed an interest in a comparative approach to studying more unfamiliar histories, looking at a range of countries within a specified time period in order to compare and contrast. Some Year 13 students suggested that studies of empire might permit this, with the focus being on the perspective of the ruled rather than the rulers, perhaps by looking at a range of countries on the eve of their colonisation by European powers. An alternative suggestion was that some of the themes that could be studied through the exploration of British history could also be used with reference to other parts of the world. How, for example, was power and authority exercised in South American civilizations? Asking my students for their ideas thus provided a rich seam of suggestions and starting points for creating a curriculum that could give our young people a stronger grasp of the history of the country in which they live, but also that country's place in and relationship with the wider world. When I looked again at the remit for this discussion, though, there's also another key dimension, which is creating a curriculum for all young people. History is a demanding subject. It's conceptually challenging. It requires a level of empathy for the attitudes and beliefs of those in the past that many of us find difficult, and is largely dependent upon high-level literacy and comprehension skills. It's because of this that many of our young people become disillusioned and disenchanted with the subject, daunted by their seeming inability to engage with the ideas or materials with which they have been presented. This is why, whatever we end up teaching in our classrooms, we must also be mindful of how that curriculum can be delivered in a way that develops the skills of our most vulnerable youngsters, as well as our most talented young historians. On this note, I just want to end my talk today with a brief example that perhaps shows how some of the ideas suggested by my students could be put into practice. Last Friday morning, I faced one of, well, probably the biggest challenge of my teaching career. I've been quite lucky. I'm a fairly sheltered teaching life. I wasn't teaching a super bright Year 12s who all got A stars at GCSE and who, frankly, are terrifying because they should all get A's at AS. So there's no pressure there at all. But instead, I was teaching Chinese history to 9 Year 10 students from an alternative curriculum group at my school. These are students who are following core GCSEs in English, Maths and Science. They attend a college one day a week and then do schools-based project work. I taught 5 of these students when they were in Year 9. And when I say taught, they spent 100 minutes a week sitting in, or to be more accurate, roaming around my classroom. And it's fair to say that I approached this lesson with a certain degree of apprehension, but an hour later, I left my classroom absolutely stunned. These 9 young people had participated in all of the activities with enthusiasm and had demonstrated high-level historical thinking. They had compared and contrasted rates of artistic and scientific developments in China and Western Europe. They had accurately comprehended the meaning of a visual source and supported their judgments with details from it, and, using their contextual knowledge, had offered suggestions to explain why that source, produced by the Chinese in around 1500, seemed to have rather a disparaging view of the West. How had this happened? Firstly, because they actually cared. And this was a discussion we had in some length yesterday in one of the breakout groups. The students actually need to care about history. Why did they care, though? Partly because of the way the project they were working on had been set up. My colleague, dismayed and alarmed by the frankly racist bigotry exhibited by many of the students in this group, had decided to use Chinese New Year as a way into giving these students a wider experience of a different culture. This has involved her creating opportunities for these students to be immersed in different elements of Chinese culture. Our home economics teachers have given them an experience to cook and experiment with the food of various regions of China. They've had specialist classes on the religious beliefs of China, martial arts workshops, people teaching them about games and traditions in China, and then I was doing the history. Slowly but clearly, this had a motivational effect on students who, by the end of Year 9, were not only just exhibiting extreme negativity towards history, but in education more generally. In terms of the history teaching itself, the teaching and planning used some of the key principles that my Year 9s have talked about, but also things we have heard constantly over the last day and a half. Start with a really rapid chronology. Simple parallel timelines of developments in East and West. Compare those developments with constant references to the different time periods you're looking at. Select a source from one of those periods, a mini depth study if you like, and keep asking the students to refer back to the key developments of the time period in order to explain the message it sent and offer suggestions to why those beliefs were held. I've spent quite a lot of time over the past few weeks thinking about the opportunities for a new curriculum and how greater flexibility in our teaching could give real benefits to our young people. I think my students have given us some clear messages. A broad scope of chronological understanding is essential. Thematic approaches can strengthen chronological understanding and permit meaningful analysis of major developments. And a more radical approach is needed to create a genuinely global program of study. But most importantly, that all of our young people can be encouraged not only to see history as relevant, but also enjoyable, something about which they care.